Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The Morning Show. The Home Team. No, it's both. It's the Crossover.
Crossover! Step back!
Presented by Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen right here on 960theref.com.
All right, it is the Crossover Podcast here on 960theref.com. Of course, you can also subscribe to us on iTunes, and we'll just show up in your podcast listening device of choice whenever we pop up with a new episode. I am Chris Brain from the Home Team, David Johnston from The Morning Show, the Crossover Podcast presented by Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen. As always, in Watkinsville, but now open at their new location in Five Points. So now more than just one place to go and enjoy. Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen, and we thank them for sponsoring the Crossover Podcast. Couple good things to dive into today. We'll talk some Georgia baseball with the regular season now over, and the SEC tournament starts this week, and then it'll be on to regional play next week. Georgia football gets another big verbal commitment. Florida's got guys going to the portal, and Georgia just keeps reeling in prime recruits. This one, too, from the state of Florida, Jalen Carter. We'll get into that. And also, I guess the deadline is looming for Nick Claxton to decide whether he's going to stay in the NBA draft or come back to Georgia. The combine was last week, so we'll talk a little bit about that as well. But, Dave, I guess we'll we got to start, what, Georgia football over baseball or baseball? Because that's kind of like the higher priority right now.
Well, I guess either way, it doesn't matter to me. I guess by the time folks are listening to this podcast, the SEC baseball tournament will be underway.
Yeah, I don't want to speak for the two broadcasters, but by the time people listen to this podcast, they might hope they're already at home from the SEC tournament.
One maybe more so than the other. But I would like to see – I think the way it's set up now, the way Georgia's got their pitching set up right now – and again, we're recording this on Tuesday.
Yeah.
So keep that in mind. I wish we could predict the future. Sometimes we can. But the way Georgia's pitching is set up, if Tim Elliott will go and pitch well tomorrow, Wednesday, and then you got Cole Wilcox Thursday, and then if you're still playing Friday – you'd have Tony Losi and Saturday Emerson Hancock. At least the way the pitching is set up, you don't have to crush your pitching staff if you're Georgia. And Tony Losi said something to us that I hadn't really thought about, too, is if Georgia did go two and out, he and Hancock wouldn't face any live hitting this weekend, and he'd rather obviously face a team. Now, they would come back to Athens and they would pitch, but it's still not the same thing if you're pitching, at Foley Field to teammates as opposed to pitching at the SEC tournament in Hoover. So I'm not pulling for an 0-2, but I don't want to see the pitching staff get crushed and then have to turn around and play in a regional the following week.
Right. I mean, at this point now, we know Georgia with sets a school record for SEC wins at 21. They finish a game out of first for the overall regular season conference championship. There's nothing in doubt now as far as hosting a regional, which really hasn't been in doubt for the last month and a half. Maybe the super regional and a national seed was still hanging out there going into the last two weekends of play, but Georgia went 5-1 against Auburn and Alabama. So now you're talking about maybe it's just a matter of how high your seed gets, but Georgia's going to have a chance to stay at Foley Field to get to the College World Series, and that's all you want, no matter what happens this weekend.
Yeah.
Now, whether they lose two or win the whole thing. So,
and remember, the Dogs last year won 18 conference games and then lost two games in the SEC tournament and still got a top eight national seed. This year, 21-9. I don't think it matters what happens this week at the SEC tournament. Georgia's still getting a top eight national seed. So it's just a matter of could it be a 4 or 5, or might it be a 6 or a 7? which has to do with, you know, who you'd be matched up with on the other side. I'm kind of like Jeff, though. I've got this weird feeling that the committee's going to have, like, Georgia as a 7 and Tech as a 10 or 8 and 9 or something like that. I just assume Tech get a top 8 national seed also. Then you don't have to worry about playing them until potentially you got to Omaha if you are lucky enough to get that far. And the ACC tournament, they do theirs. I don't know. Have you looked at their the way they do their tournament?
I've seen it in the past. It's they do pods, right?
They do. They've got four different pods. So they got four different groups of three. So you play the other two teams in your group.
Yeah.
And then whoever wins that, like Group A, Group B, B, C, and D. If you win Group A, you're automatically in the semifinals to play the winner of Group B. And then whoever wins that game is in the championship.
Yeah, it's like the World Cup.
It is. Yeah. It is a lot like the World Cup.
I will say at least the teams going there are guaranteed. They know they're playing two games.
Right.
Because it's tough, this SEC. The Tuesday round is just you're making this trip to Birmingham, and you might be turning right back around and going home.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, I guess I see the plus there of at least the teams knowing they've got two games and they're not – it doesn't feel like a completely wasted effort or trip to go. But
right.
The thing about this SEC tournament now is it's double elimination unless it isn't, which would be this first round. And then if you get to Saturday, all of a sudden it's like, well, congratulations.
Yeah.
You haven't lost a game yet, but if you lose today, you're eliminated. So
the SEC tournament, and I think a couple of the other big-time conferences use the same format. It's a single elimination, and then it's a double elimination, and then it's a single elimination.
Right. Like, pick one.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
so at least when you get to the weekend, it's not one of those where, like, if you lost, you'd have to turn around and play again that day or something like that.
Yeah, like the ACC pod would probably, unless you're just going to do a straight single elimination tournament, which would probably be the number one preference, probably that pod system would be, like, the second best, because at least you are guaranteed.
The more I look at it, it looks crazy at first, but the more I think about it, I kind of see what they're doing.
Yeah. There. Because you are at least where, I don't know, if you're like South Carolina and you've had a terrible season and you made it in there on the last day of the year.
Yeah.
Like, they're probably going there, and by the time you're listening to this, they're probably already home in Columbia. But at least they could feel like, well, we're going to have two games there anyway.
And
least.
I guess, I didn't check, but I'm assuming, because they were in Starkville this past weekend, I'm assuming once they knew that they had clinched a spot in the tournament, in the SEC tournament, they probably just went straight to Birmingham.
Yeah, they might have.
I don't think they went all the way back to Columbia.
Yeah, school's out now.
Yeah, school's out. So I guess they didn't at least travel all the way up there for that.
Right. The thing with Georgia, though, is like they've got the pitching to win a tournament like this.
Yeah.
So that is one thing. Georgia's never won the SEC tournament. So I guess it would be neat to do that. And, I mean, you would hate it to maybe grind you up for the following weekend in regional play, but you know, if I was
I've heard you mention this too, and I think it's and I wanted to ask your opinion on it, because you went back and looked at what the last 10 or 15 tournaments and how the team that won fared in the postseason.
Yeah.
And you had LSU as an example of what they've won six SEC tournaments.
They've won six of the last 10, so they might be a bad example, because they're
but
just,
I was gonna say, is that more about LSU or is that more about the stat in itself?
Yeah, to me that's where it just probably says more about LSU.
Yeah,
but even like so Florida was an example. Let me see if I could pull it up here.
Because you said LSU's won six of the last 10 SEC tournaments, and how many times did they get to Omaha in those 6 years?
Four.
Okay.
And twice they were the runner-up and once they won it all.
Right. I mean, that's pretty good, and it goes to show you that it didn't crush their pitching staff. But my question to you was going to be, does that say more about the depth of their pitching staff, or is that just, would you say in general, it doesn't matter either way?
I think it's just where it's LSU, and we know, like, they're, because so Mississippi State won it in 2012. They lost in a regional. Florida's won it twice in 11 and 15. They went to Omaha both times and were the runner-up once.
And they're generally strong in pitching.
Yeah, and then A&M won it in 16, and they lost in a super regional. Vandy in 07 won it, lost in a regional. So, I mean, honestly.
Did Ole Miss win it last year? Or did they? I'm trying to remember.
Well, you know, I'm looking in the SEC media guide right now, and they only have 2017.
They
in
didn't
there.
Bother to put 2018
no,
in there.
No. I think you're right. Ole Miss did win it last year. But, like, that's where you also – what was Ole Miss going into the thing anyway? Like, were they
– because we – let's see. Georgia was the – was Georgia the four and then lost and then turned around and played Ole Miss, and that was that crazy game that ended with the pitcher throwing it over the catcher's head.
Yes.
And I don't remember what the seedings were.
Yeah, because they had that stud like closer,
Karachi.
Yeah,
Parker Karachi. They still have him.
Yeah,
but he was the one that did that. But I think that's how I have to go see what their postseason run ended up being.
Yeah, I don't remember it either. But then I guess prior to the LSU run, look, South Carolina won at 04. They went to Omaha, but like Vandy, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, and 5, 6, and 7 did not. So
the question is, does it matter or not?
It seems like it doesn't matter for LSU, but maybe it matters for everyone else.
That's what I was getting at. That's what I was thinking.
So, I mean, I don't know. I guess it's probably if you have a really good team, which Georgia does, and they're going to be hosting a regional and a super regional. I guess it would take back to, you know, we'd have to go back and ask. So in 2016, A&M lost in a super regional. Were they hosting that or was that on the road? So I don't know right off the top of my head. I mean, the location might have a lot to do with it, too.
It has a ton to do with it.
I just think, like, this Georgia team is – they're built for success in a format like this, and they could turn around, and they're built for success in certainly a regional format, and then you get to a super, and that's just a standard 2 out of 3 weekend, which Georgia seems to have been built for success in those since they won 21 games this year in the SEC and then won every one of its weekend series leading into conference play, too.
By the way, Ole Miss last year won the tournament, and then now it's all coming back to me. They had some horrible rain in Oxford, which kind of messed things up with Tennessee Tech, who ended up winning that regional.
Yeah, but that was the team, like, you knew that we knew they were good. They led the country in hitting and stuff.
That was the team you did not want to get paired up with.
Yeah, so, okay. I mean, you could say, did winning the SEC tournament crush Ole Miss, or the fact that they just got a bad draw there with a 2 seed that honestly could have been hosting a regional in their own right?
Yeah, I think maybe a little bit of both, but certainly the fact that they had maybe as strong a number 2 seed that you could have that maybe wasn't from one of the major conferences.
Yeah. I think this is a season, though, where the as painful as that Monday was last year, losing 2 games to Duke and having the season come to an end, enough of those guys that are on this year's team that might end up being a negative that turns into a positive, that those guys are kind of out for – you know, vengeance now and not wanting to have their season end the way it did last year. Because last year it was a great team too, obviously, and they ended up having one bad day.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it was the last day of the year.
My thing too with this team compared to last year, though, is that I think this team has that belief that, hey, we're good enough. We've done it 2 years in a row. We're good enough to know that we belong up here. Where last year's team, it was like the season, it was kind of a surprise season. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There had been, under Coach Strickland, 4 straight losing seasons, and then all of a sudden they just took off last year. So there was still a little bit of that element of trying to find their way. But I don't get the feeling with that team this year, plus the starting pitching this year. And last year wasn't bad, but it's gone to another level this year.
Yeah, well, and this year's team has been strong from the beginning. Like you mentioned, last year's team looked like they were heading for potentially another losing season after that weekend in Charleston.
Right.
But that was the moment where all of a sudden it turned.
It turned. And although it is kind of weird that they beat the Citadel last year with coming off a 4-game losing streak and beat the Citadel this year coming off a 4-game losing streak. It's bizarre.
Well, hey, I got to
thank you, Citadel.
If you got a losing streak, schedule the Citadel.
Schedule the Citadel. But yeah, I think this year feels a little bit different. Not to say that they couldn't get upset in a regional or super regional. Baseball's quirky for the
you don't
post-season.
Know who's coming.
Baseball's quirky.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I think there is that sense with these guys that there's a little bit of a point to prove after not getting out of the regional last year and just that sense of confidence that not that they weren't confident last year, but again, it was like they were kind of new to the party. And this year it feels like they're part of the party planners.
Yeah. I thought like the sweep of Alabama was an encouraging sign. 'Cause that was a weekend where you could have had a team that's like, we know what our status is.
Yeah.
We're a long shot to win the league because at that point they were two games behind Vandy.
Right.
But to go out there and really, I mean, have maybe its most impressive weekend of the year, like Jeff and I were saying, we'll take 30-7 over Alabama in a couple of months. But
so, by the way, Alabama's golf team came to Athens for the regional, and Alabama's baseball team came to Athens last week for the three-game series. Georgia got 47 hits against Bama in the baseball series and beat the Bama golf team by 47 shots in the regional. Now, how weird is that?
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. I'll take a 47-point win
know,
right now in
exactly.
the in
Can
Atlanta.
Can we do it in football?
Yeah, I'll definitely take that.
Yeah.
So we'll have next week on the podcast, I guess we'll know the regional and be able to talk about that. And yeah, but that's you never know what the draw you're going to get. I remember one day looking at old College World Series, and there was one from the 70s, and Ohio was in the College World Series. And I was like, boy, well, I guess they must have had a guy. And I looked it up. I'm like, yeah, they had Mike Schmidt.
So, and I'm assuming he pitched?
Yes, he pitched and did it. Yeah. So it's like, how did Ohio get to the College World Series in the 70s? Oh, well, they had a guy. So who, like, you never know. I mean, Georgia, you could see, like, Connecticut coming here or something. Like, oh, Connecticut, what's their story? And, like, well, 10 years from now, it might turn out that they've got some dude, you know? You
never know. It happens.
Yeah.
It happens.
All right. It's the Crossover Podcast presented by Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen in Watkinsville. If you're listening on demand at 960theref.com, of course, subscribe to us as well on iTunes. We'll take a quick little break here, and then we'll come back. We'll talk Georgia football with the newest verbal commitment, Jalen Carter, at a big-time position, 4-star defensive tackle. And we'll mention Nick Claxton, too, post-NBA Combine now, which I never even knew existed until Kevin Durant went to it and, like, was only able to do one bench press rep. And somehow there were some people that thought that meant he was going to be a flop in the NBA. All right, Crossover Podcast, Chris and Dave with you on 960theref.com.
True Italian food has returned to Five Points and brought some friends along because Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen is now open in Five Points, Athens. At the new Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen, you'll find all your Italian favorites, from pizza to calzones and baked ziti, along with sandwiches, salads, wings, and more, plus a full bar for beer, wine, and cocktails. It's time to eat at the now open Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen at Five Points in Athens, and also in the Manders Crossing Shopping Center off Mars Hill Road in Watkinsville.
Episode 88, we roll on the Crossover Podcast presented by Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen. As always in Watkinsville, but also now the brand new location in Five Points is open. So Georgia picked up another big verbal commitment in football earlier in the week. Jalen Carter, 4-star defensive tackle out of Apopka, Florida. And reading about his backstory, too, one thing I like, and I think the same can be said about a freshman on this year's team now, Trayvon Walker. I like these guys that are defensive tackles, and you hear like they're stud basketball players, too. Mm-hmm.
What, you're saying they're good athletes?
Yes, I like those guys that, you know, especially at like a position like defensive tackle, they're going to be, you know, fleet of foot. They're going to have, you know, maybe a sweet little spin move or something, be able to get past those O-linemen. So just a big get at a position that I've been taking notes from that national championship game, watching Clemson and Alabama, and saying, all right, what do these two teams have that Georgia doesn't? There's only one thing to me, and that was just those defensive lines. And that's the one spot for Georgia that still is not up to par with the rest of the team or with those two teams. But I think Kirby's aware of it, and hopefully we're working our way closer to that now.
Well, yeah, looking at Carter, 6'4", 301, Jamil Burrow, 6'3", 320. And then you got, what, Nazir Stackhouse, who's 6'4", close to 300 pounds. This is what we're talking about with how teams are going to win national championships. Georgia's elevated itself to that, hey, we're almost there level. But don't you think, you know, it's easy to look back on and say this now, Clemson won the national championship almost. Now, Trevor Lawrence is good, don't get me wrong. But when all those defensive linemen came back,
yeah,
that all of a sudden it was probably the difference in putting them over the top versus teams that had good defensive lines but not great defensive lines. And I made this joke this morning on our morning show. I think if you had 85 of your 85 scholarships, if 84 of them were either defensive or offensive linemen and you had like a kicker, you could still win six games. It's like that. It's that important.
If you didn't have any
quarterbacks or receivers or running backs, you'd still win six games just because you're dominant on the line.
You get bowl eligible.
You can at least get bowl eligible.
At the
bare minimum. I just think how big of a deal this is. And we've seen it the last couple of years with the way George has recruited on the offensive line. For whatever reason, that interior portion of the defensive line has been George's kind of bugaboo in recruiting. But it seems like now with some of these names that are coming in here, and apparently Carter, you know, he's a 4-star right now. This is a guy that could be graded up to a 5-star. So he is a huge, huge deal for this class of 2020.
Well, and he announced his final three was Georgia, Bama, and Clemson.
Right, like, right. Okay.
And, yeah.
And then right after that, all of a sudden he said Georgia, right? It was like hardly any weight.
No, he tweeted, I'm 100% committed to Georgia.
Yeah.
So, which I like, that's how commitments happen now, just on Twitter.com.
Exactly.
But, hey, we'll take it for sure. And, that's the one spot. I think back to the 1-8-1-8 and that national championship game, and the guy for Alabama that I wish wasn't on that team was Daron Payne, even more so than Tua, who came in and saved the day. Because Gilliard was a really good center. And, I mean, so good that Ed Orgeron said he was the best center he had ever watched on tape last year.
Right.
And he was, I mean, he just looked like it was a peewee level football compared to having to block Daron Payne. Then they replace him with Quinnen Williams, who ends up getting drafted higher, going third overall. And then we know the pipeline they're running now at Clemson. And somehow getting those guys to come back to school. Because everywhere else, Trevor Lawrence is insanely good. But there was no quarterback in the country better than Fromm post-LSU last year.
Right.
Not even the two guys that finished 1-2 in the Heisman race.
Yeah.
So, you know, we got Swift. We've got the O-line. I think I feel confident about the linebackers and the secondary. But, and I don't think, we're not bad up front. I think those are good players.
No, Georgia's got good players.
We just don't have like a slew of first-round picks there.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I know he was a bust in the pros, but the kind of season that, like, Jonathan Sullivan had here.
Right.
What is it Kirby always talks about? Creating havoc. Those kind of interior portion linemen where, yes, they can take up space, they can stop the run, but they can also create havoc as well. And that's what we're talking about here, of recruiting those defensive tackles to another level.
Sure. And there was definitely in the tail end of last season when Jordan Davis got in there and started I think he's got potential to definitely be a big-time star there. Trayvon Walker comes in.
I was about to say him.
Yeah, with a lot of hype. And then the other guys that have been here, I mean, if there's one thing about our front on defense is that's really the most experienced spot on the team. There's a ton of seniors there. And they're not bad players. It's just, I mean, let's be there. There's no Dexter Lawrence or Christian Wilkins or Quinnen Williams type guy there
right.
yet. So.
Right. But maybe they're those guys in the making.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
I think, I don't think, Kirby would be in here yelling at us right now saying that. I think he's aware of it too. And that's why we've seen an uptick here in the recruiting at that spot over the last year or so. And finally getting some of those guys who, you know, think about Aubrey Solomon, Derek Brown, that we kept missing on.
Are you surprised Derrick Brown came back? I guess because of all these other defensive linemen, I guess, that were in this class.
Yeah, when you think about it, like, he wouldn't have gone ahead of Quinnen Williams or Wilkins or Lawrence.
Would he still been a top 10 or top 15?
He might have been, yeah.
I
don't know. But I guess I'm still surprised that he came back.
I am too, a little bit. I'm not going to be critical of it. I was just surprised that he did come
No,
back.
I know, because it's like, well, he's dumb. He should have gone pro and got paid. Like, he can do whatever he wants to do.
Exactly.
It might not be the decision I would have made.
Exactly. I'm not here to say that. I'm just a little surprised that he came back.
Yeah, but he did it. It's like with, what's his name now? The Zion Williamson.
Yeah.
I want to know, like, how many people that were saying that he should have quit playing at Duke last year after he got hurt are now also saying that he should just go back to Duke so he doesn't have to play at New Orleans?
Yeah. Like, playing for the Pelicans is the worst thing ever. Or that, because he's not going to the Knicks or the Lakers, that he should come back and play another year for Duke.
Yeah, like it might be, because Anthony Davis apparently doesn't want to be there anymore. But I know one thing Zion Williamson will not be doing next year, and that's returning to Duke.
He will not be playing any home games in Durham, North Carolina.
No, he won't. He's going to be playing for the Pelicans, whether he likes it or not.
Now, here's a good question. Will Nick Claxton be playing home games in Athens, Georgia next year?
I still don't think he will, no.
Well, there was a good story on ESPN.com a couple of days ago.
I think I
from
saw
the combine.
It.
Risers, fallers, and more intel. And they had Claxton as one of the risers, but...
Yeah, yep.
But they also said he would be better off to come back as far as his draft stock, potentially. In other words, right now, he could be a late first rounder or a second rounder. If he comes back, he would have the chance to potentially be a lottery pick, and he'd have the NBA scouts all over him all season long because of the Ant-Man.
Right.
So could the Dogs potentially have two lottery picks on the team?
I think
that would be awesome.
I think the Ant-Man definitely is. And then, it's just if potentially Claxton could come back and hone his skills and sharpen them another year in college and maybe be more, more ready for the draft then. Yeah, but that's the thing. The NBA, it's not like the NFL. Those guys, even in the late first round, they'll take a guy that they know is a project and be willing to just be patient with them.
Stick him in the G League for a while, potentially.
Yeah.
But the thing about the NBA, though, is the first round, the guaranteed money, the second round, it's not. So it becomes different there as far as that goes. And I did see this same story. There was a mock draft in there, and they had Claxton going 41.
Yeah, I saw a mock draft that had him. I've seen mock drafts that actually one had him going late first round, and then there's others that don't even have him
exactly
in there at all. So,
So as a Georgia fan, would love to see him come back. And I'm still leaning that way. But my head's starting to say, well, there's a lot more to this than, he needs to gain a little bit more weight and that kind of thing. Because all it takes is one team to find you intriguing enough to think that you can do something on the next level.
Well, and there were enough things in that story, too, about his combine performance that it was like, well, he didn't do this well, but then he was doing this and he was doing that. And then one thing they mentioned, didn't he like miss 9 free throws or something?
0 for 7.
0 for 7. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
But he blocked 11 shots, had 4 steals, switched on the perimeter seamlessly.
He hit a 3, couple threes.
Measured out really well.
I know. But then in the end, it was like, but he'd be better off. But that was my devil's advocate play when we first talked about this a couple podcasts ago was, in Claxton's mind, it could be like, do I want to come back and play with Edwards because he's the one going to be getting all the attention anyway? Mm-hmm. Or do I just go and...
Edwards game up Claxton's game?
He
doesn't have to be as much of the point guard like he did this past year. He can play more of a normal position for himself. I don't know.
Right. No, I mean, as a Georgia basketball fan, I see the great potential of having those two guys play together, but I could also see the point of view from Claxton where it's like, well, yeah, but I'm kind of like the big deal now, but I won't be this winner.
Yeah.
Because it'll be the Ant-Man.
I like the sentence, though, that says, scouts are intrigued by his modern fit on the defensive end of the floor.
Well, you know what it is? And it's because there's been a lot of conversation about how basically, this guy Steph Curry has made the center he's extinct now. Because those back to the basket centers are where they're really obsolete. Because you've just got a guy like Curry that is just jacking up threes from anywhere on the floor.
I've read stuff about how if they want to get back to that with the bigger centers, that they're going to have to move the 3-point line out.
Right. Yeah. But that's the thing where Claxton is not a big guy. He's 6'11 and he's not bulky or whatever, but you don't have to be now. And a guy like that could defend a guy like Curry.
Yeah. Exactly.
So
the modern fit on the defensive end.
From the minute he announced and he did so with that note that he wrote, I said he's gone. He's not coming back. And
Chris Brame, I hope you're wrong.
I do too, but I'm still sticking with that. I don't think he's coming back. Because I think he's just too – because he's good. And I could see where – I get where he's – maybe he could potentially improve his stock next season. But, who knows? Is he going to get any bulkier than he is now? If that's like the biggest knock on him?
I guess they can put some weight on him, that kind of thing. But then would that hurt his game a little bit?
Yeah.
I don't know.
And, like, the thing is if he comes back, I mean, Tom Crean and Georgia can't be thinking of it like, well, you know, we'll do what's best for you to get to the next level. I mean, we got to – you know, Tom Crean's got to worry about just winning games here for Georgia and what's best for that. It's like that guy that was knocking Gus Malzahn on about having a terrible offense and – NFL scouts have no way of evaluating his quarterbacks. So, like, that ain't Malzahn's problem.
No. Although you could say, well, that's how you track players is how they get to the next level. But
sure. I guess again, at a point where if Malzahn feels it's hurting him, then he needs to change. But at this point, like, if you can't evaluate my quarterbacks, that's a you problem.
That's a you problem, exactly.
I'm going to the Waffle House.
Exactly.
All right, Crossover Podcast, that's a wrap. Episode number 88. Dave is off to Birmingham now, where he might spend 2 days or might spend the whole rest of the week.
Just never know.
You never know.
Nope.
But we'll be back again next week, I guess at some point.
Maybe a late week taping.
Maybe a late week, yeah, but we'll be
it
back.
Maybe a pre-regional taping.
Yes.
Yeah.
We'll be back at some point, though, next week. But you just have to stay tuned. Just keep checking your iTunes. Now download us there, subscribe to us there, or you can listen anytime on demand at 960theref.com. Thanks to a Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen, as always in Watkinsville, but now their new location in Five Points in Athens. For Dave from the morning show, I'm Chris from the home team.
Before we go, I'll ask you one question.
All right.
You know, because you're going to miss Jeff for the next few days. Do you think we can beat Tech?
Yeah.
Okay.
In football.
Right.
We're
all
talking
right.
football.
In football,
yeah.
football.
In baseball, too, I think we
okay.
will.
Okay,
yeah.
right. Just make
I
it
think
sure.
we are going to beat Tech.
All right. Now we can travel a little easier.
Yeah. They should be awful this fall. No problems there. It's the Crossover Podcast, episode 88, presented by Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen in Watkinsville on 960theref.com.
You've been listening to the Crossover, presented by Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen on 960theref.com.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.